Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick here to talk about today's press conference the Ravens did on the draft upcoming. EDC out there with John Harbaugh and Joe Ortiz, people that know an awful lot about the Ravens draft direction and will tell us almost nothing about it, and particularly what is one of often several liar's luncheons that you can get before the draft. Anyway, joining me to talk about this is Alec Poulianos. Alec, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Excited to talk about this Liars Luncheon. I wish I was there, you know? Yeah. Have some lunch. It seems like a nice little event.
I don't know actually if there actually is lunch at this. It might just
there
be
is. It's at 11. I saw it on the board. Yeah, someone posted the schedule. So I guess they all have lunch first, and then they chit-chat.
Yeah. Well, of course, the topic everybody wanted to ask about, and there were three questions about this in the first 4 minutes and 40 seconds, was Lamar Jackson. How's Lamar Jackson contract going? And they tried to redirect and say, hey, we're going to try and respect the process. EDC, you know, came out and said that is that he wants to respect the process and talk about the draft in this particular segment. Some of the panning across the panel there, particularly, you know, the look on John Harbaugh's face with regard to Lamar Jackson's contract and what it got, a very stone countenance. Mm-hmm. And do you have thoughts on that?
I mean, I saw it and just they look so uncomfortable up there with regards to those questions. And then we had the interjection from like Ravens PR to like basically stop asking the questions. And I think that just like really set a tone. I've watched a lot of these press conferences before. I've never quite seen something like that.
Yeah, it was a strange kind of a thing. There are three questions in the first 440 anyway there. They talked about the strong cornerback position, which is good. That's, you know, obviously a directly addressing the draft and as an area of need for the Ravens. DaCosta mentioned there might be 4, 5, or even 6 guys who were first round talents.
Yep, I'd agree with that. And I think it is nice, we'll get into it later in his comments, that there is depth at the places that they're most looking to address.
Great, great point there. I'm going to sit down on the cornerbacks with Michael Crawford tomorrow. Nice. Have that discussion, and that should be out on Friday, I believe. So you'll have an extra long time where that's the podcast over the weekend to kind of get to. But Michael always has very good insights into draftable players and whatnot. And I have some hot and cold guys of my own in this in the cornerback group. Who do you really like out of that group? Do you have one?
Oh, Gonzalez is my favorite. I love him. Yeah, I when I first watched him, I was like, this is the best corner, and I still feel that way. He's my number one.
Okay, I understand why Gonzalez would be the first guy taken. And if it's just a question between Gonzalez and my guy, then I would take Gonzalez. If you know they're both on the board at the same time, and the Ravens are picking. That's not going to happen because Gonzalez would be gone long before the Ravens select. But the guy I really love, despite the some of the size limitations that are associated with him, is Malcolm Forbes. And he, to me, he looks like a Marcus Peters-esque player in terms of his gambling instincts. They're just at an incredibly high level. Guys made to play cover three zone corner, and it'd just be very interesting to see him do that. He's got good length and whatnot, but his ability, his ability to read the quarterback and break on the football, absolutely outstanding. And you know, replacing Peters with another Peters is just it'd be very exciting to me.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's a great prospect, number 21 on Jason's big board at the moment. So right in that sweet spot for we could maybe draft him.
Yeah, could be at the intersection of need and value streets, as I always say, when they get the Ravens get on the board at 22. It's got a bunch of players who might be there. There'll be some corners left, I presume. At that point, I don't think we're gonna have a run of, you know, four or five corners that are gonna go all in a row like we saw the wide receivers go last year. I think there's some graduation, and I think there's actually, because of that, I think there's gonna be some impetus to wait at corner for a lot of teams. So we'll see if the Ravens get their guy at 22.
Yeah, I think that's going to play in both the wide receiver and the corner position. Because of the abundance, there might be a little bit of, well, we wanted to get the last guy. You know what would be the first one to take?
DaCosta mentioned the fans will be happy. It's a strong receiver class. I think I'm pretty well coaching that. And you know, I would kind of hope Eric DaCosta, particularly this time of year, is not being a slave to Twitter. And he mentioned one scout who was definitely not on Twitter at the end of the thing. I want to talk about him when we get down to that part of the conference. But I would hope he's not being a slave to Twitter too much, because, boy, you don't want to pick anybody but a wide receiver if you look at the Ravens fans on Twitter. I mean, just there's I think they're much more likely to pick a corner than a wide receiver. And when I say much more likely, 45, 35 at corner and 20 at the field is where I would still have it about right now. But I just think there's a high probability they end up picking a corner.
Sure. I think so too. It just makes a lot of sense to me. I also think if you aren't steadfast on assuming 22 is going to be a Ravens pick, then it's reasonable to trade back and get both of those guys in the 40s and 50s and I feel pretty good about who you got. So I would love that strategy, but I don't, even though, you know, EDC opened up basically broadcasting, he's interested in acquiring more picks. And I think specifically interested in acquiring picks in the first 85, like before that third round pick, like that's where they're at.
Okay. So I'm going to look at the draft tech thing here. The Ravens have 1,025 total JJ points this year, 780 of them, over 75% are in that number one pick. Yep. If they don't trade down with the number one pick, they're not really picking up picks of much value. They might be picking up extra six, extra seven for trading down in the fourth round kind of thing, but they're not. It's not going to be a real exciting accumulation of additional picks. I thought one of the interesting things that he mentioned was that they'd had a number of consecutive years with additional picks. This is a year where they're light on picks. They want to get more picks. But on the other hand, they've had some problems getting everybody a spot on the roster year after year. Obviously, this has contributed to them breaking their UDFA streak as well, though didn't really mention that. And it is a question: is do you really have enough room if you are consistently beating the hell out of the compensatory draft system?
Yeah, no, I think that that's kind of getting to my point. I think they want to. They have more needs than 75% of their draft capital to attack a problem.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Great
and,
point.
And they need to split it. So it's like splitting your hand in blackjack, right? It's a smart play. I really am hoping that they're able to do it. I think if they do pick there, it's like either a guy that's super high up on their board, like a la Hamilton, that they decide to pick there, or there's just no one to tango. So we'll see how it plays out. But I definitely agree with you. And with DaCosta, I think they can't draft more than six or seven guys. Like, they might want more picks, but they really just, I feel like if they draft more than that, you're going to get into problems of how they make the team, unless there's a bunch of injuries we don't want.
Yeah, I mean, there will be some of that, and they have some flexibility with the, you know, 54th through 57th guys in terms of getting a Brent Urban, for example, you know, on the temporarily a cut section. But anyway, he was very classy about that. Really appreciate that from the interview.
Yeah,
let's hope that split we're talking about, though, and this is where I think this is really important, is more like splitting aces than splitting eights. You know, what you're describing, and I agree with the strategy anyway. I mean, I think they really need to trade down. It's more like defensive splitting of I've got a hand that can't possibly suit my needs now, and I have to trade down. If they get full value, great. If they don't, I'd be kind of upset with that. And we could, you know, have some long discussions about what constitutes full value, whether it's a Rich Hill type value or whether it's a JJ type value. But I think by broadcasting this, there is the possibility the Ravens will reduce their chance to get full value in trade down for that selection.
I think it barely does, because I think it's no secret that the Ravens are always interested in more picks and trading back. He mentioned that they've done it 9 times in the last 4 years, so they're very used to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's certainly a good thing. He did say he was kind of confident, I believe was the word he used, that he'd be able to get more picks. One of the early good questions that related to QB, but was actually a pivot question on somebody told they couldn't ask a question about Lamar Jackson, was, are you looking at QB differently in this draft? And he said, I think we really are. _ best player available. They really want to be agnostic about their positions. Not exactly his words, I'm paraphrasing, but you know, they've got their board. They've got quarterbacks in the top 31, was something he said later. Is there a possibility to draft a quarterback? Sure, there's a possibility.
Yeah. Yep. And there is a single scenario where at 22, if there's a certain quarterback still on the board, which I would be absolutely stunned and floored by, then I'd be like, fine. I don't even care if Lamar's on the roster. I'd take him, and I would say, you know, we'll figure it out. Like, yeah. I'd be very willing to do that.
So is Levis your guy, or is AR-15?
It's all AR-15.
Yeah.
Levis doesn't exist to me.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. But I'd be very excited about AR-15. The range of places where he could go is so great in this draft that's a, you know, he could go in the top 5. Four. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he could go as early as 4 is definitely true. Or he could end up, you know, I could see Levis being the guy who goes ahead of him. If the Colts end up taking Levis, you know, at number 4, or trade down even to get Levis, which would be, I think, a very smart strategy by them, then there's a possibility that AR-15 goes to Seattle at number 20, the Ravens at number 22. There's a few different possibilities where he could end up landing. I still think it's fairly unlikely he gets out of the first round, but that's still a lot of variation for a potential franchise quarterback in terms of where they might go. Not as much as Malik Willis last year.
Yeah.
But a lot of variation. Yeah.
If he gets past 7, that's why I said last night on our show, if he gets past 7, I will be very surprised. And I think then it's all up in the air. His fall could be more than I expected, but I have a feeling he's going to go very early. I don't think it's even outside the realm of possibility he goes number 1. I don't think it will be. I think it's going to be Stroud, but I would applaud it if they did that. I think it's very ballsy, but I would be like, okay, I see you. I understand.
Yeah, that's well, it'd be interesting to see how that goes. Some good information. I thought that Hortiz didn't answer a lot of questions on this, but he did answer a good question about Todd Monken, that he got Todd Monken input, but you know, one of the good things, and how does a new offensive coordinator impact your, you know, who you think about drafting? He said, Monken says, I'm very versatile. You give me players, I'll do the best I can with them, kind of thing. Loved hearing that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved hearing that. I'm not sure we would have gotten any different party line, but I loved hearing that. It sounded genuine coming from him.
And it sounds correct based off everything we've heard about Monken and his philosophy towards the game. And that's what makes me excited about him. I think he's a chameleon offensive coordinator. He'll take what you give him and he'll make an offense that works. And I think that's a really excellent place to be for this franchise where they're at right now. And also just in general, I think that's the NFL teams change year over year. Yes, you have a core, but being flexible and willing to change for your personnel is key.
Right. Absolutely. EDC was asked, how does five picks impact your strategy? Only having five picks. And he's had an interesting answer there. He said he didn't have the same anxiety to watch a ton of players, given that they don't have, you know, six picks in round four. I think they had five picks entering the day, and then they picked up a sixth in round four, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. So without all those low round picks, and they do have a pick in the sixth round, but they don't have a pick of the fifth, pick of the sixth, that he doesn't have the same anxiety to make sure he watches a larger field of draftable players. I paraphrase some there. Mm-hmm. I'm glad he's feeling less anxious about the thing. I don't think he would really ever let himself off the hook in terms of watching as much tape as he possibly could until what is effectively New Year's Eve for a general manager, you know, the most important day of the year in terms of the biggest party of the year too, in terms of having draft day. But on the other hand, I look back to the draft 2 years ago and the fact that they didn't have a pick after round five. And I think they significantly wasted that last pick on Ben Mason. Mm-hmm. I think they might have reached on some earlier players, most notably Brandon Stevens. Mm-hmm. And it was a draft I'm not particularly happy about the outcome from. So if I am being correct in hearing what he's saying here, I hope the Ravens still have plenty of options for round six and seven. I hope their scouts, the people mm-hmm. in the room, are all as prepared as ever to draft in those rounds when, you know, you might get Geno Stone or you might get another player of real value in round six or seven. So just want to make sure they're there.
Yeah. And I'll say this, you know, I've had a lot of conversations about this draft with Jason and his big board, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's really just saying there's not that many draftable players this year compared to last year. And like, that's his like around about way of saying that. Obviously I think they'll be prepared for all stages of the draft. But I'd also get the sense that maybe they're also taking the approach of they like certain tiers of guys and they just have confidence based on their, you know, experience with the draft that they could pick and choose from those tiers confidently. They will get everyone they want to get. Like, they have their favorites, so to speak. And with only five picks, like, they're going to get five of those guys. So they're almost thinking of the draft that way, where they've seen enough to know that they're going to be happy. But I didn't read too much into that. I think it might just be, I don't know, wisdom over the years. Like, he's like, I'm not going to stress myself out. Yeah.
That could be. That could be. We heard a couple times during this press conference how he's been doing this for 28 years now. So that was interesting, you know. And you know, one reporter asked a question about, are you concerned about a receiver? And you know, the questions that come and with you know, having Pro Bowlers everywhere else, but not having Pro Bowls or receiver. And goes, you know what? If it wasn't that, it'd just be another position you'd be asking about. It's a great answer. I really loved it. It kind of made light of the situation to the appropriate degree and also framed it up in a way that I think is very fair. That, you know, consider all the successes we've had correctly at pretty much every other position in terms of Pro Bowlers being drafted and high rate of Pro Bowlers with early picks and using draft capital just effectively generally, as well as pretty much any other team in the NFL has over the Ravens' entire time here. And you know, I think it speaks for itself that DaCosta and Newsom have been the biggest constants in the NFL, in the entire league, in terms of drafting since the Ravens came into the league.
Mm-hmm.
All right, quarterbacks. Got asked about more of that. Like, how many quarterbacks would not be a complete rebuild? He mentioned about four guys, but then he said you can get a good QB in any round. I think obviously he's talking about four guys who he thinks could maybe start in year one, and it's the four everybody's thinking about in terms of Richardson, Stroud, and Levis, and who am I forgetting? Number two pick, Young. Probably. Young, yeah. Jeez, I forget him. And, anyway, the guys at the top of the draft, he believes, you know, they're going to rebuild on the fly, but he also thinks they can get what I suspect he would term project quarterbacks in a middle round.
Yeah, I think there are some really decent candidates later in the draft that they could pick on. I think that we had that discussion too last night about, I think this is a year where drafting a quarterback makes a lot of sense, not just because of the Lamar situation, but because of the Huntley situation. You got to restart that clock. Yeah. I mean, they do have Brown. That is an option for the clock restarting, but I think bringing another quarterback into the building will happen this year. It's just a matter of who. And there are some really nice prospects where they're not going to rock your socks off. I don't think they'll ever be a top 10 quarterback, but they can definitely be a top 18. And that gets you to the playoffs because you have a good team otherwise. So I think they're just being open and honest about that. This quarterback draft has some of those candidates, and they're also uniquely in a position to accept that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think that's your analysis there, I think, is very good. I think the Ravens are likely to bring in a quarterback and try and at least have a competition there. I thought it was a quality competition with Anthony Brown last year. I thought having him around was a positive thing. Obviously, he ends up playing a game in the regular season because mm-hmm. Huntley got hurt after Lamar. But even just what was happening during the preseason, I thought it's always healthy to have that. And I think that the Ravens had a legitimate question on their hands in terms of resetting the clock even last year. And now they've got a huge question with regard to resetting the clock because Tyler Huntley will be a free agent at the end of this year. A UFA. He's an RFA this year. Another thing I want to talk about, somebody asked about Patrick Queen's fifth year option, not the forum, obviously, but DaCosta immediately used his question badminton racket and swatted it away and said, that's a discussion we'll have to have with Patrick. I think it's pretty clear the Ravens are not going to give Patrick Queen the fifth year option if they have any way they can deal with that before. When connecting this back to the draft, there are three ways the Ravens can get more picks that really make sense. Number one is they can trade down from 22. And it's really got to be 22 because that's the only amount of value. And we talked about that early, so we don't need to repeat it. Number mm-hmm. two, they can trade Lamar. Mm-hmm. And we hope it doesn't happen, but it might. And if it does, that's a lot of additional draft capital. Right now, the Ravens are one of the poorest draft capital teams in the entire NFL, missing their second round pick. There are a couple teams below them, but there aren't many in terms of mm-hmm. having really limited draft capital. And number three is they can trade Patrick Queen. And it's a question of what value you get for him. But it's also a question of designing your roster so you don't have to end up paying two inside linebackers. And I really don't think they want to set themselves up with a big nut on the books for Patrick Queen in 2024 when they may need to franchise Lamar again.
Yeah, that's a really good point. They have to make that decision, I think, a week or two after the draft, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, it's May something, May 7th maybe.
Yeah. So we'll find out then. What are your chances, I guess, of him getting traded? Do you have an odds on that?
Yeah, of him getting traded. They will do everything they can because they will lose value if they don't unload him here. So, so I'll put on my GM hat for a moment. If they keep Queen under the current contract, in which he's, you know, he didn't make the Pro Bowl, which is actually a very good thing for Ravens fans and for Ravens. If you're a Ravens season ticket holder, or if you're Ravens, whatever, I mean, making the Pro Bowl would have been the worst thing in the world because his salary would have jumped significantly. It would have got a significant escalator out of it. So right. He didn't make the Pro Bowl, even though he played well. And he will be around for year four at a reasonable salary. And then in year five, he'll be around. And I forget what the number is at inside linebacker, but it's somewhat significant. He would then be around for that. They can't afford to franchise him for sure, but they might hold him around on the fifth year contract. If they decide the fifth year value is too much, then they basically have truncated a fair amount of the value of Patrick Queen because somebody else doesn't believe the fifth-year value is too much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're going to believe that's reasonable. So if they cut it off, they cut off value of Patrick Queen that they then have in the have in the organization, and they can't trade him for as much. So I think the chance that he plays with the Ravens this year on the salary is not insignificant, but it's also not the outcome they want.
I agree with that. I think it's unfortunate that the business of football is like that, but he's just he's depreciating value right now, and it's basically I almost look at him as a 1-year rental, almost like an in-season trade, if you may, of we trade a third round pick or whatever he'll get us back to have his services for the year.
That's a great point. That's exactly how you should look at it as a GM. So what? We didn't have to trade any pick to get Patrick Queen. We gave up the right of a third round pick, and that's exactly how you should look at it. The Ravens obviously will have to look at their weak side linebacker position and look at their ability to platoon. I think they've got great ability to platoon in house. Mm-hmm. I think they have that right now. And hey, if the other situation is you draft another safety. Or don't even draft another safety. Get another safety. The safeties are cheap as hell to find, whether it's a free agency after the draft, whether it means you find that guy as a UDFA that they like again. I mean, they're very easy to find. Ozzie proved that time after time in terms of dimebacks. They can easily platoon at that weak side linebacker spot.
Hey, guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock. Because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist. And the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door. So now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code. Or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock after 1 second. You put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry, no more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door, just like me, just like Ken.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones
who get it done.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
That's what they want to do.
Yep, for sure. I think it's they're moving in that direction, and based on Queen's market, we'll decide how fast.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the way you think about that particular thing. And it's kind of like the go for it on fourth down situation. There's risk in going for it on fourth down, sure. There's a lot of risk in not going for it on fourth down. That's it. You know, you punt the ball away, the other team may drive up the field and, you know, score the winning touchdown or get the score that puts you in a bad position. But every path in life has risk associated with it. And if there's truly a riskless path, the other path doesn't even exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way you look at that problem.
I do. Yeah. I've been very molded by the Rush lyric and Free Will of if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
Oh, that's a good one. Put it in the song. So, very good.
Yeah.
All right. We heard a good little snippet from John Harbaugh about the value of Chuck Smith and having just on the edge position with Vasilerikos, I thought it was very telling just how many players kept coming up that don't really have a refined toolkit and would really benefit from working with Chuck Smith. And I think he's going to, I really expect him to do wonders for the outside linebacker group. I hope he's a guy the Ravens can retain for a couple of years at least, because I think he'd do wonders. Assistant coaches, they tend to move along when they're position coaches and they get coordinator roles. If Chuck Smith has a big year with Owe and Ajabo, you'd have to figure he's either going to get a big money opportunity somewhere else, which hopefully the Ravens could match, or a big increase in responsibility opportunity that he can't pass up, whether that means a larger defensive assistant defensive coordinator role or an actual defensive coordinator role or whatever it might be. But really looking forward to Chuck Smith. He referenced back to 2008 training camp. Chuck Smith apparently was in the building with the Ravens. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he didn't. I didn't realize it either. And honestly, I didn't know who this guy was until we acquired him a couple months back or whatever it was. But there was a lot of like hype on Twitter about it. So I was like, okay, great. But yeah, it seems like this is a nice acquisition. You always can remember that coaches don't count against the cap. So a great way to exploit the cap, so to speak, and get more value out of the players that do.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I'm sorry, I got distracted here for a second. Talked about the big three wide receiver prospects, and we're back over to Ortiz for this one. I think gave us a fair amount on each of them in terms of what they bring. Then there was another question that came back about the next two guys. So the next two guys were Flowers and Quentin Jefferson. The first three were, I don't have it in front of me right now. I'm sorry, I'm blanking.
Yeah, I don't remember. They ask about the big three wide receivers, or are those your words?
I think they mentioned him by name, and they asked about the three big wide receivers. Anyway, Ortiz had comments to make about each of them, and Flowers and Jefferson. And, I thought the interesting point about that, and this is something that I completely agree with, is really need to watch how drops occur. So the hand placement drops, or the focus drops, you know, trying to get up the field. He didn't mention every type, but it was a really good point in terms of grading receivers, and that was something I liked from his comments. He didn't answer too many questions on the day, but there were times when I felt like Joe should have been answering the question, not Harbaugh.
Yeah, and there was a few times where it looked like they did a little handoff, so to speak, to see who's going to talk. But I found it interesting. Like, the reason I was asking you about big three wide receivers, I don't really see it as big three. And I also, I just find it very interesting to see how everyone views these wide receivers, because there are just a lot of differing opinions of even the top guys and where to rank them. So they did talk about Johnson and his ability to catch. And also that's something I've been reading up on more this year. I've always listened to Matt Waldman, but this is my first year buying his RSP. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. He does this huge, huge breakdown. It's like over 1,100 pages of people.
No, I do not get that. I'm going to take a look at that, I think.
Yeah, he does this huge thing, and he always talks about like clap attacking the ball and different hands techniques. Mm-hmm. And it's like very deep on each person and how they catch the ball. And that's something that I've been learning more about this year in my process. And, you know, it's something I've noticed, you know, I've seen, but it's nice to have actual words for it.
Yeah, we talk about it a little bit of the tight end thing, because, I mean, double catching the football is bad, but most tight ends don't do that. They have the big hands, so they single catch the ball. The thing that the tight ends, some of them are really adept at catching the ball away from their bodies. Some of it like it right on top of their bodies, and I think that leads to drops. I don't like that at all. Mm-hmm. And the Patrick Queen missed interceptions, a couple of them from last year, one where he caught it like right next to his face mask and it bounced off through his hands and off the mask. You give yourself an additional chance to tip it to yourself if you catch it a little bit away from your body. So mm-hmm. Anyway, absolutely. Love that stuff. DeCosta was asked about the lack of free agents, and he said, we signed a lot of guys who wanted back. Never been a big free agency team. The draft will always be our biggest and best way to improve the team. There's an important point here, is that the Ravens really cannot sign anyone more before the draft at this point. They've almost codified that with comments today, but they didn't say why. But the reason is that they have a fourth round compensatory pick coming back for Powers. It was already kind of a gut-wrenching move, I'm sure, to have to give up the money for Aguilar and also know they're losing a sixth round pick that they would have had for Josh Oliver.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's meaningful additional draft capital. And if you're in the form of, hey, I want more draft picks, well, don't trade away a draft pick. You just trade away a draft pick for and no, we didn't have it yet. No, you did have it, and you traded and you let it get away. That's exactly what happened. You know, it was a kind of manna from heaven, a gift. That they got a huge contract for Oliver. Maybe they were expecting it, but mm-hmm. But I sure wasn't. And that was it's a shame that they couldn't hold on to that.
I'm curious how much they value a sixth round compensatory pick, because it's effectively a seventh round pick, right? And there are like no JJ points. So at that point, it's really just getting a. I think of like round six and seven as they're not quite UDFAs, preferential UDFA treatment. And that's worth something. Don't get me wrong. Because we've seen plenty of great players come out of the sixth and seventh round, mostly the sixth, but for obvious reasons. But I definitely think it was curious for them to give up that late sixth round pick. It soured me on the Aguilar acquisition, frankly. Like when I first heard about it, I was nonplussed. And then when I heard we lost the compensatory pick, I was like, that's a bridge too far.
Pissed. Just pissed.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just he better really take the top off the defense in terms of his contributions to the Ravens offense. And why be mad at the player?
It's not, yeah,
he's,
no, it's
he,
not
his he put that deal in front of the the team put it in front of him, and that's where you can get upset, I think. And if you look at the Ravens' sixth round success in their history, sure, they've had plenty of misses, but the hits they've had have been really good ones. Chuck Clark, Adelis Thomas were both mm-hmm. sixth round draft picks. They mentioned Tyrod Taylor in the press conference today. I mean, but the Ozzie Smith, I can always get you a cheap dime back, is often predicated on a sixth round pick. And it was also a guy, if he spent as much as a sixth round pick on it, he was also getting a core special teams player. So you're getting a combination of real high leverage defensive play plus a core special teams player. And he was just extremely adept at that, at finding the guys who really met that profile. What else we got here? Let's see. Harb's comments about receivers and having superpowers to overcome their size was just kind of some comic relief. This was interesting. I thought the question of will the presence of Ajabo and Owe impact the decision to draft an edge? And EDC responds with, if Will Anderson is there, I think we'll take him. Well, yep. You know, that's good. That's why it's the badminton racket. Of course, it does influence the Ravens' likelihood of going after an edge. And if faced in a situation where they have an edge in a corner, I think they're probably going to take a corner if they're roughly equal on the board. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was Hortiz who finally mentioned the importance of Sam characteristics, and it was a fleeting comment. It might have even been more than what DaCosta really wanted to give away during the meeting. Mm-hmm. But it's the kind of thing where he talked about, you know, different characteristics, guys who play well in space, guys who can drop from the line of scrimmage. And, you know, saying that those two things, which are basically very similar things about playing well in space and dropping from the line of scrimmage, is telling me the Ravens are really focused on getting a Sam linebacker this year as opposed to a pure rush guy. But then Ortiz reversed himself and said, but if, hey, if we can get a pure, you know, huge rush guy, he had some word for it that indicated that they would be amenable to that too.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I listened to your edge commentary with Voss, and I agree. Like, doesn't hurt to get more of those kind of guys, keep them in a rotation. They've effectively lost one so far with Houston being gone. So there are
Houston
snacks.
Get signed?
Well, he's not currently signed.
Right. And JPP's not currently signed either, as far as I know.
Yeah.
But they're both, one of those two probably comes back.
Yeah, probably JPP. I couldn't remember if JPP had a 2-year deal. It's that he gets money this year, regardless. He counts against this year's cap. That's how they like structured it. So he is gone, not currently on the roster, but yeah, he will get money from us. Yeah, I think it's an interesting time. One thing that I would love to know, and I don't think I'll ever have the pleasure of knowing, is do they rate their board with that positional need in mind? So would that edge player already be behind the corner, or are they looking at the board and being like, well, we know we don't want, like, you know, is it, I'm wondering how baked in those biases are into their board.
Right. So Sweetholder events in the past, this is a long time ago. Now we're talking about 2009, 2010, they would take you right into the draft room after the board had been taken down and the draft had occurred. But you would still see all of these individual plaques that they would post up for each team. The plaques themselves individually had a series of dots on them that meant different things. So Red Star is the famous one. A Red Star player is one that some individual scout is going out on a limb for, saying, I love this guy as a Raven, plays like a Raven, he'd be perfect for us, yada, yada, yada kind of thing. And those players were marked with a red star. If you were a 3-year starter, you got a half a pink dot. If you're a 4-year starter, you got a full pink dot. If you were a, let me think something. There's some combination of various combine test profile, combine tests that if you got so much in 3 categories, then you would get a blue dot. And the big one was a black dot. You get a black dot if you had an injury question, or if you had a off-field character concern, okay. Or I guess it's generalized character concern. And the Ravens did actually have a black dot player that they drafted that year's Arthur Jones on the year I saw the board like that, and that ended up turning very well. But he dropped in terms of where the Ravens had him. To get back to your original question, I think they have an agnostic board they're working from. And then they fit in need at the time of the pick. So I think they're saying, well, these 3 guys are all better and they're all 7.5s and we're drafting a 7 here if we go down to draft this corner, but we don't really need a quarterback, a tight end, or a, you know, 3 tech. Mm-hmm. And so they might, you know, they might legitimately do it that way, but I think they keep their board agnostic, and that's why they've got this, you know, BPA board is a starting point. I think it's a good way to do it. I mean, you know, what I would always say is separate the factors as much as you possibly can in how you're doing it. So don't create a combined form that already includes the 2 factors. It's a naturally fluid situation. You want to be able to react to that on draft day.
Yep. And I think that makes sense. Now we've kind of talked through it, that your needs also do change as you make more picks. So keeping the board unfiltered by need makes sense.
I thought one of the best questions of the day came right at the very end is, what have misses taught you over the years? And whoever it was, might've been Viviano, might've been somebody else, said, you know, obviously you've had a lot more hits than misses over the years, but, what have the misses taught you? And he said, when we've missed, it's often been a case of, need competing with value. He didn't say it exactly that way, but that's exactly what it is. It's need competes with value. If you have a BPA board and you can draft by it, and he did address this to some degree, he said, generally speaking, you're going to do pretty well, even if it's over multiple years. But it's once you start imposing need on your BPA board, on your value board, that you end up potentially going awry. And, oh, this guy's the last cornerback. We got to have it because we need a cornerback kind of thing, is where you know, need comes in, and you'll often, you know, end up with not as good a result on the pick as you might hope to have. I got one more thing to say, but hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I thought the other thing actually is different, but tell me what you think about that first.
I definitely think that there is, there's always like a little bit of gamesmanship going on in the draft as far as amount of guys in a tier and not being left holding the bag. I think it is a good point, though. I think that there might be bad picks made when the scarcity is getting high.
Yep.
And I think that's something that they know about. You got to get all that corrected in the pre-draft process when they do their simulations and their war rooming. That's, I think, how you can best learn where those tendencies are in this year's draft and like how you feel about them. It's better to live it now than 3 weeks from now. So I think there will always be times for a situation you didn't quite see coming, or, you know, the results make you look back differently on the process. But I am confident in their wargaming, that they're able to kind of predict the future of how this draft will play out. And having gone through those decision points before the actual day helps a lot.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see if the Ravens do any mock drafting where they try and get people who are outside the building, because that would make a lot of sense. Because you don't want the same people who've heard all the exact same things from your scouts evaluating players and making the decisions on those bases. You know, this might be an area where you go to some really well-known bloggers for each team, say, and you try and find ones for all the other 31 teams that are not the Ravens. You have one of your own guys do the Ravens, or your own draft room do the Ravens for you. And you know, try and figure out if that would work. But I think that would be an interesting way to war game your way through it. The problem is you're also giving out information if you do that. If you then have the Ravens have, you know, taken so-and-so off the board at that point, well, then that, you know, kind of gives away some of your own drafting strategy. So it might be the kind of thing, hire Brian Billick and a bunch of other people who are, you know, coaches who have left the game and whatnot. And then it gets into question of, does Brian Billick still stay in tune with it enough to know all the players who are on a draft board in 2023? And I just don't know the answer to that. He might not.
Potentially. Yeah. Get a bunch of people from the end of the bar, have them do some draft picks.
That's what it would be.
I do think, I'm trying to think how you could like do this without tipping your hand too much. Yeah. You could always just be like, here's the board, make your selection, go to the next person. Here's the board, make your selection. And they don't get to see who anyone else has picked.
Now that's not bad.
Yeah. You know, like, why do you care who else has been picked? You already see how the boards went. You can infer that these.
So you only get the board when it's your turn to select.
Correct.
But then that also does take a component of the war game away, because you can't say, well, a player drops six spots further than I thought, I'd like to move up eight to get him. You can't make that trade. So you lose a
Value. Yeah, without trading. Yeah, it's super hard. So you would have to organize it from a third party that's not associated with the Ravens, unless you knew their books. And that's how you could do it.
Yeah, you could. I guess you could have an NDA, but it's really just too important to.
I agree.
They wouldn't do it.
High risk.
All right, he did say one other really interesting thing, I thought, in terms of what he's learned from the misses, and that is that you can't discount a negative minority report. And he mentioned one specific scout, and this was really interesting. Ron Marcinak is being a guy who didn't give a crap what other scouts thought of players. And so he had a first round guy. He could toss an undraftable tag on him, and that he'd occasionally done that. And, you know, we look back at that, there were cases where, you know, the guys were out of the league in 3 years. Mm-hmm. So for, you know, a guy from the past who has a Baltimore connection, Aaron Maben, was a guy who was built like a wide receiver and trying to make it as a pass rusher in the NFL. There were some doubts about his frame at the time, but people fell in love with the quickness and the bend and whatnot that he had. And,
and basically hand waved away all of the, I'm way too small to play, you know, edge at 228 or whatever, 225 or whatever he was. But I'm thinking of him as being a specific player that Marcinak might not have liked and might have said, you know, he's undraftable at that size. He just can't play the position.
I appreciated that. I definitely think there's a lot of value, and I'm curious how much the Ravens are able to pull this off where they don't pay attention to everyone else's opinions until much later in the, and then how much they let that weigh in on their decision making. I try to stay as pure as I can in a way with looking at prospects. Unfortunately, I always have to look somewhere to get an idea of who the heck these people are, because I don't watch enough college football to have an opinion. But it is important to me in my process, and I think it should be for anyone who like cares about this enough to like put their name on these players, that it's your thoughts. It's who you need to have a grade on. And I think there is a lot of value in one bad scout. Like I think when people are really negative on these young men, they're doing it for hopefully a very valid reason in their minds. And then it's not just to, you know, they even said that in the press conference, they don't want to smear anybody. Right. You know, so you're always looking optimistically in this time frame, trying to figure out what these people can be with their traits. But there is value in knowing when you want to take a stand and say, no, this is not a player for me and not for this organization.
Right. Yeah, they definitely did reference some of that in terms of the injuries and whatnot. And they said in terms of injuries, they don't take anybody off their board. I don't know that they ever addressed directly taking people off the board for character concerns, but I do know that they passed on Laramie Tunsil to pick Ronnie Stanley. Mm-hmm. That is the most classic character concern thing ever. I mean, I don't even think it'd be considered nearly as significant today with marijuana so widely available and used, but just some of the judgment that went along with it was not good. You know, the mm-hmm. fact that there's a video out there of him wearing a pot mask is not a good thing for purposes of him realizing, hey, I'm going to be playing in the NFL. I ought to take care of myself. I ought to, you know,
right.
keep myself in a better position than that. I think the Ravens have had significant character concerns in the past which has caused them to pass on players.
For sure.
All right. Outstanding. I thought, you know, pretty interesting conference in total. Once they got past a lot of the Lamar stuff, there was a lot of little interesting tidbits about the draft that were fun to hear. Any other points you want to make before we call it off?
It was very refreshing to get a conference that wasn't about Lamar, frankly. There's so much more to talk about this time of year. And I was glad that we did get those tidbits. So looking forward to the draft. Hope that it falls nicely for us and we're able to make some really high quality picks.
Yeah, well, me too. Alec, it's been a pleasure. Tell people where they can talk football with you.
Sure. You can find us at One Winning Pod on Twitter, onewinningpod.com, and also on YouTube, One Winning Pod. We just put out our offensive player discussion today. We'll do our defensive discussion next week, and then we'll have kind of our Red Star episode where we talk about the players we really want the Ravens to target, our favorite guys for the Ravens and at values that kind of makes sense with what we are dealing with. And yeah, I'll kind of wrap it up for this season.
And you'll be joining us from the Netherlands on draft night.
That's my hope, man, because I can't imagine not seeing the first round. There's too much at stake for the Ravens. I just care about seeing how this plays. I also care about seeing how these like quarterbacks play out. I'm just like personally invested now. I'm like just I'm curious how my evaluations will translate to the NFL. You know, I'm always curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, we were actually out of the country for when Flacco got drafted. So that actually all of them for that matter. I at least was staying, I was in the hotel looking at it for the Ray Rice pick. Mm-hmm. But we were out of the country for Flacco, and the whole thing, you know, dropping down then going back up, it was a kind of an oddball situation.
For sure.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up with a DM on Twitter. It could be any topic at all you want to talk about. Franchise building, the draft, if you like. This is the time to get in with those kind of topics. I'll get back to you very quickly. And if you want to do a That One Play episode, still lots of opportunity to do that before the preseason starts. and we're looking forward to that. Alec, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks so much, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.